Welcome to Scary Stories, the channel that tells you scary stories.
Welcome to Scary Stories. I'm Peter Bernard. When I was a kid, my parents were jealous of this one friend of the family who owned a home out in the suburbs. One time, though, she took me aside and told me this story about why nobody should be jealous of others. None of us know the secret problems of anybody besides ourselves. We're lucky enough to get to hear the story, narrated by Madeline Starr.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. The Nightmare Face, as told to Peter Bernard, read by Madeline Starr. I want to tell you a story about the most horrible things I have ever had to live with. Now, when I was a kid, my family was poor and lived in the South Bronx. We had roaches, we had mice, we had rats, we had those giant water bug cockroaches. Ugh. We even had centipedes that would bite us in our beds at night. But it wasn't until I had some money to my name that I met the most terrible pests of all. After I grew, I got lucky and married a very kind and somewhat well-off man. And he bought us a house in a nice secluded neighborhood out on the edges of the suburbs, just large enough that we could raise a small family there, if the good Lord saw fit to bless us. I wouldn't call us rich, but I never had to work, so I kept the house clean and grew a modest-sized garden out back. This was the early 1960s, and one night my husband and I watched Rod Serling on the TV. My late husband, let's call him Claude, he hated Rod Serling with a passion, but I loved that show, so he watched it with me. He said it gave me nightmares, and I would wake up saying strange things to him. But I never remembered this, so I liked the show just fine. Anyway, that night there was a show about a talking doll that kills people. Or else it was a ventriloquist dummy that kills people. I'm not sure, but either way, it was about something small that shouldn't talk but does. So when my husband awoke to me standing by the window screaming, he naturally assumed this was another Rod Serling-induced nightmare. Except it wasn't. What happened is that I got up inexplicably at 3 a.m., and unable to get back to sleep, I decided to look out the windows at our backyard and the forest off in the distance. It was very peaceful watching the branches blow in the breeze, back and forth, back and forth. And soon I was beginning to feel sleepy again. I could swear I heard someone close by whispering my name. Then the hideous thing popped its head up to stare at me from the bottom of the window, and I screamed. It looked like the face of a little man or a doll. Not a human, more a mockery of a human face. It looked wrong somehow. It wasn't because it was so wrinkly. It wasn't the way it seemed both pale and flushed simultaneously. It wasn't the angry, bloodshot eyes. It wasn't the patchy, balding hair. It was all of them and everything they implied. It was a troll face, a gnome face. It was a nightmare face that shouldn't and couldn't exist in waking reality. Even after it was gone, even after Claude had me in his strong arms embracing me, even after he began speaking to me soothingly, I couldn't stop screaming. After I was calm enough to explain what had happened, Claude just kept telling me it was a dream. I don't even know if anyone knew about sleep paralysis back then, but Claude was convinced it was a dream, or what he called a walking dream. I kept telling him this is not what it was, but he just held me and kissed me, then drew the curtains and suggested we at least try to sleep. He reminded me he had a gun under the bed, and told me the next time I saw it, I should just tell him and he'd shoot it for me. I knew he was humoring me, but at the same time, he really did have a gun under the bed on his side. So I felt a bit safer, and I went back to sleep. Nothing happened for a few days, and then Claude was called out of town on business, and I was to spend the night there alone. It was just one night, and I had put the gnome dream out of my mind. So I was just planning on watching a little TV. It was Dick Van Dyke night, and heading to bed early so I could have breakfast ready for Claude when he got back at 6 a.m. Obviously, you're already guessing that things did not go as planned. Before Dick Van Dyke even came on, the tapping began. I heard tapping on the dining room window, but could see nothing out there. I heard tapping on the bedroom window, and when I went back there to investigate, then I heard tapping on the front windows. A chill went through me as it occurred to me that I was entirely alone, and I might be facing more than one harasser, if indeed I was being harassed. I got the gun out from under Claude's side of the bed and stared at it for a while, trying to figure out how to turn the safety off. I had never actually used or even held the thing before, and holding it now made me feel physically ill. Stomping as loudly as I could, I marched to the front door and threw it open, holding the gun like I was ready to shoot. I yelled loudly, "I don't know who you are or where you come from, but you better go back there right now because I know how to use this here gun." At first, everything was still, but then I saw a bald head pop up from behind a small fence in my garden. Then, to my right, from behind a bush, walked the one I had seen the other night. Only this time, it was wearing a hat. It looked handmade, like a handmade pilgrim hat without the buckle. It wore a rag shirt tied at the middle with what looked like yarn. Its feet were bare, and its toenails ended in long, rancid-looking claws. I saw another head in the distance, directly in front of me, and sensed peripherally that they had me completely surrounded. "What do you want from me?" I asked in as steady a voice as I could. "Are you hungry? Do you need water?" At this, they all moved forward, each of them staring at my eyes. I can't tell you how many of them there were, but it had to be more than a dozen. I felt under their trance as they swarmed over me and tied me in that yarn. They spun me around and around until it was a cocoon, and they placed me like that on the top shelf in the back closet. Then they closed the door, leaving me in there, and I heard them utterly trash my lovely little home for what seemed like hours. I woke up in my bed to utter silence. Instantly terrified, I sat up quickly, looking around. The first light of dawn was coming through the window. I realized I had to get up to make breakfast for Claude and that I didn't know how big a wreck the rest of the house was going to be. Surprisingly, the demons centered their destruction on the kitchen. There were two glasses and one bowl broken on the floor, and a big mess everywhere, but no broken windows. The TV set and the radio were still in place. It didn't seem as though anything but food and drink had been stolen. However, there was nothing left for me to make for Claude's breakfast. His car entered our driveway as I was finishing cleaning up. After greeting each other in that way that newlyweds have, I broke the news to him about what had happened the night before. At first, he thought I was joking, but I let him inside and showed him the empty food cabinets, the empty refrigerator, and the broken things in the trash. I don't think he believed me still, but he did say he'd drive us both into town for some breakfast at a diner. Then he could walk to work, and I could use the car to go shopping for more groceries. I pointed out that it was kind of silly to buy more food if those things were only going to eat it all again, and suggested I get Pastor Schneider to come out and bless the house or something. Claude was a good Christian man, but I think he thought blessings and prayers were superstitions. And I saw him roll his eyes at my suggestion, but he said he'd go to the bank and take out some extra cash before breakfast. This way I could make an offering to the church to thank the pastor for his blessing. When Pastor Snyder did come out, he gave the blessing and then took me aside for a private chat. He told me about some local Native Americans he was converting to Christianity. He said they told him about creatures just like the ones that stole my food. He said that family left the creature's wine and food at the outskirts of their property every Sunday before church. And so far, the monsters haven't raided their home since. Maybe it was the blessing that kept them away, or maybe it was the offering. And Pastor Snyder suggested it might not hurt to try both. Well, the pastor died in 1989. My beloved husband Claude passed in 1998. And here I am, all these years later, in 2017. According to Rod Serling, back then, I should be flying around with a space pack on my back or having my brain transplanted into the body of a young girl. Instead, I find myself in 2017, still here on the old property, still staring out the same windows at the same garden and trees. We never did have any children, and thanks to Claude's generosity, I've always had more than I needed. It's never been a bit of trouble making the offerings of food in the forest, and I've never seen my little monster friends ever since. But I don't think they've left, because every time I go to pick up the plates, all the food and wine are gone.
You won't believe what we've got coming up next episode. Aliens stole my breakfast cereal. You won't want to miss it.
Come back for more scary stories.